Hello and welcome to the Run the Day podcast. I'm your host, Nick Simmons. With me, as always, is my co-host, Cam.
Hey, you guys, and I wish you could see Nick every time we do the intro because he does the hand motions and everything.
It's because I'm always so YouTubing. I'm like, hey, how's it going?
Welcome to the show.
Hey, quick plug for my YouTube channel. Go check me out on YouTube if you want to hear tips and tricks to be a faster, happier, stronger runner.
Yep.
We have fun on the YouTube channel, that's for sure.
It's awesome.
But we had a lot of fun in today's interview as well.
We did.
I love when you get athletes. I mean, obviously, I've got a soft spot in my heart for athletes.
Yeah.
This is Marcus Peterson, and he has such a great story. Mm-hmm. He grew up in Inglewood, California. For those of you who have heard of Inglewood, it's probably for something not ideal, like gang violence or drugs. But there's also this beautiful culture of Inglewood that enjoys dance and music and sports. And fortunately, sports found Marcus, you know, at a relatively young age. And man, it took him to some pretty cool places.
Yeah, it's beautiful just to hear his story and everything he went through to get where he is. I think the cool thing about Marcus is he was just doing things for fun at first.
Yeah, he was just saying, I was just hanging out with my friends.
Hanging out with his friends. And it led him to playing professional football, which I think is so special because sometimes the journey is about having fun and we end up in places we never would imagine.
Well, and one of the things I love most about Marcus's journey and his take on it is he says, I just waiting to be triggered. You know, he's just like, I'm just going through life. And sometimes these signals, they trigger him and he just has to go find out what that means. So Marcus talks about being open to opportunities as they come to you rather than trying to force everything in our lives. He says, you just got to be ready so that when that opportunity comes to you, you can take full advantage of it.
Exactly. And that's the key part of it is being ready. You know, you never know when that
phone
call
is going to
come, that email is going to come in.
Marcus is going to tell you his story, how you can be ready for when that opportunity finally finds its way into your inbox. You guys are going to like this one. It's about entrepreneurship. It's about sport. It's about life. Mm-hmm. Without further ado, here he is. It's Marcus Peterson. All right. Here he is coming to us from Inglewood, Los Angeles. It's Marcus Peterson. Marcus, how are you?
Good, good. Thanks for having me. How are you guys?
Dude, we're great. We're just jealous that you're down in LA because Cam and I have both spent time living down there. We love Southern California.
Where are you guys now?
Eugene, Oregon. You ever played football up here?
I have not, but I've heard good things.
Home of the Ducks. Yeah, we got a big stadium. You're welcome to come check it out anytime.
Thank you. And that's where the Nike headquarters is, I believe.
Good memory. So Nike was founded here and then they moved to Beaverton, which is actually closer to Portland. Few decades back. And so they're headquartered up there a little closer to the airport and the talent pool, but they were founded here. Gosh, back in the 70s. I should know this.
Yeah,
late
60s, while,
early
right?
70s. Yeah. Yeah. It was originally Blue Ribbon Sports, which Nike's a much better name.
I agree.
Okay. Nice.
Do you have a shoe contract?
I do not. So anyone out there listening, I'm ready to go.
I love it. I love
That's
the hustle.
Perfect.
That's awesome. Yeah. So I actually came down to Eugene. I was living in Salem and Nike picked me up to run for their pro running team that was based in Eugene. And I've been here, gosh, I don't know, 15 years now.
That's crazy.
But this isn't about me, man. This is about you. I want to hear your story. Your story is so freaking inspirational. Mm-hmm. I love that you're back home right now. What was it like growing up in Inglewood?
Pretty simple. I'll tell you this. So basically growing up, I grew up in a comfortable environment here in the inner city of Los Angeles, California, Inglewood, California. You kind of had like three options depending on where you live. You know, you had sports, you had music, you had stereotypic gang violence type community, and then you had like dance. But being I'm my mother's only child, so I was born and raised in a two-family home, but my half-brother and sister are older than I am. So when I was born, I was basically just us. So growing up, it was just me and my mother and my father. So I kind of had a lot of alone time to myself, which is, I think, worked out the best because I was able to find who I was and my purpose early in life, if that made sense. So I was 9 years old, and that's when I finally realized kind of bringing in who I was as a person here on earth. So growing up, it was pretty nice. Like I did take advantage of going to the beach, just kind of California things. But I remember going to college and I realized like, wow, Los Angeles is really nice. Like we don't take advantage of the beach, the weather, the food, the culture that Los Angeles has. So it's pretty nice.
I love that you say, you know, it was simple and it was nice. And I think that some of our listeners who haven't spent time in Inglewood, they're like, really in Inglewood? Cause we hear a lot of other things, right, about Inglewood, but it has a strong sense of community, and it does have that culture that you're talking about, the dance, the sport, the things that Inglewood should be famous for. Why was it football, or why was it sport that originally was a thing that called out to you at the age of 9?
So sports wise, I got into that because when you're a kid, your parents put you in sports so you can develop the habits of discipline, teamwork, just get you involved in life. My dad is into music, so that was kind of forced into I was about five, but that just didn't connect with the music side. So he kind of took the pedal off because his whole family is music. He has his own gospel group that traveled the world. So that just wasn't my calling in music. Although I love music, I can't do anything without listening to music. But as far as playing and being a musician, that wasn't my calling. So I played a variety of sports. I did karate. I did t-ball, basketball. I was really into basketball. Like, basketball was my life. And then when I got to high school, everybody was getting taller than I was. And I kind of stared at 5'11". Everybody was getting like 6'6", 6'7", 6'4". So I was told to try out football because my best friend at the time, and still now, like, he like forced me basically to play football because of my size. So 10th grade of high school, I started playing football, and, you know, I kind of got good at it. It was okay. And then, so I wasn't going anywhere basketball wise because we had 71 commits on our basketball.
Wow.
Holy smokes. Like,
that's incredible.
Yeah.
You guys were all right.
It was basically a basketball team. You know how some schools are football powerhouse or baseball powerhouse.
This was a basketball school.
This was the mecca of basketball here in for a small school in LA.
What's the name of the school?
It's called Price High School. Mm-hmm. It's a Christian school for Crenshaw Christian Center.
Yeah, Cam's brother was a top 20 D1 recruit his senior year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
End up playing for Oregon and Pepperdine, one of the other reasons we came down and spent a lot of time down there. But so you're at this basketball powerhouse, 10th grade. It's kind of late to be getting into football. What was that first season like? Were you a little bit of a fish out of water?
So to explain that, so like my grandpa got me into, I think it was flag when I was 7, but I kind of just played at 7. And then I've always watched it though on Sunday. So after church, get home, dad will make breakfast, and then I'm watching like Victor Cruz or Randy Moss or Ocho Cinco, things of that nature.
Yeah.
Dante Culpepper. So I used to always watch it, but it was, you know, thrilling to watch. And then I got into it because I wanted to use, because as you know, football season is before basketball season. So I wanted to condition and get the strength for basketball. That was so in love with basketball. So as time went on, and as you know, like in life, when you're around something and someone so much, that becomes your passion. So my best friend, that's all he did and he loved was basketball. Was football. So hanging around him and his friends and his trainer, that kind of became my passion as well later when I was a senior. So I went off and I played 8-man football. I didn't even play 11-man football. So it was like 12 of us on one team.
Just so, because the high school was so small?
So small. Graduation.
Yeah.
Graduate of 25 students.
Wow.
Wow.
So it was really small. So, yeah, it was like 12 of us on a football team. Very small school. So no one took me serious.
How did you get recruited?
So I guess back then they had, I don't know if they still do, but they had like recruiting services or something like that. Mm-hmm. So one of our linebackers, because you know, high school, you got to play like every position. So
right.
One of
our, especially when there's only 8 men on the field. 12 men on the field.
Yeah. So you got to be the player, the coach, the water boy.
Yeah.
So he was getting recruited, and then we all went to the same school in Kansas. So it was 3 of us that went. And then so we stayed for a year and didn't really like the program. But we went because, like, 2 friends going to another state college, you're thinking of. And this is when.
Was this junior college then?
No. This is university.
Gotcha.
This was an NAI. And this is when that show Blue Mountain State was, like, it came on a year before or something like that. So that's kind of honestly what we were thinking college was going to be like.
And which school was this?
It's called Avila University, which is in Kansas City, Missouri.
Oh, okay. So we big change of scenery from Inglewood.
Yeah, literally from like hot to cold. It was a whole new culture. But I'm glad I went because like you were so kind of in tune of what the diversity of Los Angeles is. But when you go to the Midwest, that's a whole nother ballgame.
Oh, yeah.
So it was pretty cool, honestly. So I went there with two of my my former classmates and teammates, and then they transferred. We all transferred, and I transferred to Seton Hill a year later because the best friend that introduced me, he went to Oregon, actually, and played, and then transferred to the Division II.
Oh,
so
cool.
That's how I ended up at Seton Hill.
What did you think about Seton Hill?
Different. So now I have this perception of Los Angeles, California, Inglewood, California, to Kansas Midwest when you're driving and it's like raining cats and dogs and then a deer comes out of nowhere. Like, it was just everything.
We're not in LA anymore.
You're not in LA anymore. It's freezing. It's hot. It's just like a totally different scenery. And so I always like being a new face and the new guy. So that was always a thrill for me. But going to now the East Coast, so now it's a whole nother ball game.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's colder than Kansas. The diversity is different. The culture is different. The scenery is different. So it was, but like I said, I went to Kansas with friends, and then I went to Seton Hill with friends. So I didn't go by myself. So that was kind of the thing, and I was grateful for.
That helps in the adjustment.
Yeah, that definitely did.
When you're looking at different programs, you know, you went to an NAIA school, you went to a Division II school. I hear from young kids all the time, I've got to go D1, I got to go D1. And it's usually more about impressing people than actually choosing the program that's right for you. Our listeners know I went to a D3 school. You went to a non-D1 school. What was that like? What was it like from your, you know, people back home, from teammates? Was there any, you know, in track and field, certainly there's a lot of, oh, if you can't go D1, then why even bother? What was the thought in football from the people that were closest to you?
Well, it's different for me because I was only playing because my friends were playing.
Oh, I like that. So, yeah. Just trying to have a good time.
Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't like a...
You weren't trying to be fast-tracked to the NFL.
Yeah. So, no, but I didn't want to go to the NFL until my junior year of college.
Wow.
So all this stuff was just like, and my friends are doing it. Because I didn't even care about, like, graduating from high school.
Hmm.
So it was like, okay, well, everybody's getting accepted to colleges, and I don't want to be, like, a loser, you know, and not go to college. And
that's a fun time, right? Being a football player on the college campus is a fun time.
Yeah, but see, I was not used to any of that stuff. Because, like I said, I didn't start playing until 10th grade. So all this football culture was new to me.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, I was good at it. I was playing with my friends. That's kind of all I thought about. Until I started getting serious, like I said, my junior year, I started getting really good at it, and I started working out with NFL guys at the time, quarterbacks and receivers, and they thought I was, like, in the NFL.
Hmm.
So I was like, no, I'm not. I'm still in college with sophomore, whatever. I'm like, oh, well, keep at it. Keep doing your thing. And that when I got that reassurance and those words, that's when it triggered.
Okay.
So but what before that, what flipped in your mind, like, I want to start putting more of my time and energy into this? When did it go from I'm having fun with my friends to this could take me somewhere?
Just like that, when they would ask me what NFL team I was.
Hmm. Seeing other people who had done it that believed that you could do it was enough to kind of trigger that fire in you.
Yeah, so it's like stars in the NFL, and I'm like, hey, I'm out here with them. It's kind of, it's just cool, you know.
Yeah.
Like we kind of have that same kind of style. Of course, they were, you know, more wiser, faster, better, but I was still like camouflaged.
Yeah,
and you know, their talent.
And so are you then reinvesting your time and energy into football and just saying, hey, if I got this good, you know, kind of goofing around with my friends, how good could I be if I really go all in on this?
So once that triggered, it was like, maybe I can, you know, take this further. So that's when that triggered, when they asked me that. And so right then and there, the off season, that's when I was like, okay, well, maybe I should take this serious. And the biggest thing was, it's because people said I couldn't do it. So that's the biggest thing. Like, I didn't really care about the NFL or things of that nature. It's just once I was told, nah,
you can't do it.
Happen,
I love it. You got both forms of motivation, right? You've got the people both who believe forms. In you, who are like carrying you on their shoulders towards greatness, and then you got the haters who are trying to drag you back. And both can be really motivating in different ways.
Yeah. So it was a different energy evolved into one. So I took it both by the horn on the positive note and on the negative.
Love
it. But I think looking back more on the negative side of
Yeah, what motivates you more? I mean, obviously, the one that the thing that triggered it was these guys recognizing that you could be that good.
Oh, the most?
Yeah.
Is the
haters. Yeah, I'm the same way, man. I had a chip on my shoulder when I was younger in college, and I just wanted to prove everybody wrong. That's all. And now it's the exact opposite. I want to prove everybody right.
Yeah.
But I used to just want to prove every hater wrong.
Mm-hmm. That man, that was my, I don't know where I got that from, that characteristic from, because my parents aren't like that. But dude, like, if you would tell me, man, you can't jump this far.
Yeah, like, watch me.
Jump, like, 1,000 feet farther.
Yeah.
So I took that negative energy and then transformed it into a positive.
I like that.
So it was more like, it was negative, but you were kind of cheering me on.
But you fuel. Know, like, yeah, absolutely.
It was like, what is that term? Reverse psychology.
Basically. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I kind of reversed it to that.
I always say I had a chip on my shoulder. I had this just like, anyone who had doubted me in high school or anyone who doubted me in college, I just had to prove them wrong. So I had this chip on my shoulder. It didn't necessarily make for the most happy, positive, athletic mindset, but man, it is a motivator for sure. I hear you.
And you've had lots of success with it.
So we have another big transition though. That? Oh yeah, please go ahead.
So if it wasn't for that, now that I look back, if it wasn't for those not having the college career that panned out like how I wanted to, like everybody else was getting like 100 tackles, 100 catches, you know, mm-hmm. big scholarships, things of that nature. If I would have had that route, I'd probably be living a life that I probably wouldn't want to.
Right.
But the way that it went, and here's the thing, like when I started working out with those quarterbacks and receivers, now when I went back to college, it wasn't the same. Like the ball would come out super late. Like, you know, the talent was just not, you know, it was different because going from elite down to Division II, it was more of a, well, I'm ready for the next step.
Yeah.
And although, like, you know, I wasn't playing, or even like the people, everyone would say, like, you know, you can do this, you should be doing this, you should be playing and having these many touchdowns, things of that nature. I always envisioned, because I already knew where I was going. Mm. I was just waiting on time, if that made sense.
Tell me about that though. You know, you have the talent, you have the desire, the drive, but how does one make the transition from standout college player to NFL player?
I envisioned like a 3-year ahead of time before, like when I was in practice and not getting any reps, I already envisioned like what I was watching on Sundays. Like I wasn't even mentally at practice. It was ridiculous. And when I would do like one-on-ones or I'll do like my team, that's the film I would get from my practice film of doing really good in practicing. Cause I just knew, once like it hit November, because we never made the playoffs. So once it was November, then it was time to go. So I was staying in condition. That's kind of how I looked at it.
Yeah.
I really didn't care too much. Like, you have to control what you can control.
Sure.
Like, I could have cried about like not playing and things of that nature, but I just knew where I was going. And everybody laughed and thought it was funny, but I mean, I just knew. And then when it happened, then of course, you know how life happens. Once you say and do what it is that you preordained and spoken, then now it's, oh, he did it. But it's insane how I envisioned all that, like the very moment, like when I played my first NFL game, I saw that 4 years before.
Wow.
It was like crazy.
Visualization's powerful. Mm-hmm. What did your old teammates say when they saw you play that first NFL game?
Oh, of course. You know, I had some friends that were cool. Mm-hmm. You know, they knew like, man, you're going to do it. Mm-hmm. Don't worry about them, blah, blah, blah. And then you had most who kind of with the Debbie Downers.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they hit me up, that's what I was cheerful for, is like when I got those hit ups from coaches or teachers or old players, like, yeah. But at first it wasn't like a revenge. Yeah. It was more like I told you, like you guys didn't listen.
I love it. I have professors from college that I had kind of similar story.
Oh, yeah.
They would message me and be like, wow, I thought you were delusional when you said you wanted to run in the Olympics. I thought you were absolutely crazy.
Totally.
I'm like, but glad to see you made it. So yeah, I hear you, man. It's one of those things where, you know, we talk about both motivators, the good and the bad. It feels great to prove the doubters wrong, but it also feels great to prove those that had believed in you right. Did some of those guys who say, you know, we recognize it in you, this, they say, Marcus, see, I told you, man, you could make it. Did you have those people that you were able to celebrate with?
Yeah, that's the cool thing. Like, man, I already knew. I told them. And they were more excited. They were more excited of proving them wrong than I was, or they were on the same level of like, man, see, they're an idiot. I told them. So I respect that, because they had the same vision that I did. Because I understand everybody can't go to the NFL or NBA or wherever, Olympic, things of that nature. But it's like, we weren't groomed. Like, and I believe in Alabama, like, they start working on combine like their freshman year.
That's why I was so shocked when you said you started playing in 10th grade. I'm like, well, when I think of an NFL player, I'm like, yeah, they probably grew up in some mega football culture, started playing, you know, Mighty Mites. And I'm just like, dang, dude, that's impressive. Your work ethic in high school and college must have been next level.
Yeah, it didn't, like, it's all been triggers. Like, it didn't switch on until when they were like, hey, okay, you're in college. Well, I thought you were in the NFL. Boom.
Yeah.
Right then and there.
And then in the midst of all of this, where are you getting your MBA? You're so busy. How are you finding time to do this?
So briefly, I graduate from undergrad in 2016. Then I had a workout with the private workout from the Browns, because I was networking like crazy, like emailing everybody on earth. What's it called? LinkedIn.
I was networking. Just,
crazy. Going to CFL workouts. And that's another thing too. I went to my first professional CFL workout and I did super duper good. And that's when I was like, wow, I can really do this.
That was CFL, are you talking about Canadian Football League?
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a different game though, a little bit, isn't it?
Yeah. But that was my first ever professional workout.
Got it.
I was like, wow, I can really do this.
Yeah.
So I had a workout with the Browns, and that's when RG3 was signed to the Browns, and Hugh Jackman and the VP, Sasha Brown, was there as well. So they came down here to Orange County, California, and they see me work out. They said I did a really good job, but again, I didn't have that college film to back it up. So they said, get some film, and then we'll reevaluate later on. And then so I had no agent, no draft, no nothing. So God placed a message from a coach on Facebook late at night at like 12:05 a.m. here in Pacific time. So this guy, he was like, you know, hey, do you want to play football in England? And at first I thought it was like a joke, but I was hearing before that they had football overseas because my friend did it when I was doing my senior year. So I didn't really hear about it or believe in it. And I was working at a job here at USC. I was going to get fired from my job. It was just like everything going downhill. So I was like, you know, I've never been to England. I can go play football. But then he was like, oh, yeah, but there's a flip side to it. You have to do a degree, either a postgraduate law or something. Because I just got my bachelor's, so you have to do something that has to do with school. And I was like, Well, you know, and I graduated that May, and I was going that August. So I have no children, no real responsibilities, no marriage. I was like, you know what? Might as well. And college was super fun to me, and I just needed one more year, honestly. So there were four other guys that were in kind of the Facebook chat with me. So we're kind of all on the same thing again when I was in Kansas and when I went to Seton Hill. So I had guys who were on the same page who were familiar, because going from another state, that's different. But going to another country, that's a whole nother ballgame. So, and I think it prepared me, God prepared me from going from Inglewood to Kansas to Pittsburgh, because it's all different cultures and climates, to going to another country. So if I was going from Los Angeles to another country, I probably wouldn't.
Pretty tough. Yeah.
Yeah. I probably wouldn't have done it. But it was God's plan that it worked that way. So
that's quite a journey, man.
It was hell trying to do it because, you know, the whole legal things with the visas and passports, but there, played football, got my MBA in global business finance, which was literally the best year of my life and also the toughest year because a 1 year accelerated course and another education. So that's another thing. It's a whole another educational system. So it's not how we learn in America. It's how they learn in Britain. So I had to relearn. So, you know, here, you write papers in MLA form or APA, blah, blah, blah. But they do a whole nother Harvard Literature Review, which is not taught here. So learning level 7 education from another country, that was super duper difficult. So my best friends became my professors. And it was really difficult. I had to really time everything at the time, my showers, at the time, my naps, at the time, my dinners. because time management was key. Because and also on a master's level, there's no such thing as A, B, C, D, E, F. It's on
pass, fail.
Yes or no.
Yeah.
Yay or no.
Brutal. Impressive you were able to balance all that.
Honestly, looking back, I don't know how, but I think you just either sink or swim. But thank God that's over.
I love it.
And I feel like in the moments when we're the busiest, we're able to get the most done.
You have to. There's no other option.
You had no choice. It wasn't optional.
You
were so busy, you couldn't even like feel bad for yourself. That's how busy you were. Like, yeah. You didn't have time to like be overwhelmed.
Well, you've obviously carried that mentality of wanting to be busy, you know, throughout your life. You know, now with your entrepreneurship, how do you find time for it all? You know, the training, the clothing line, MP Motivational Apparel, everything you're doing on social. How do you balance it all?
Yeah, because here's how it all started. Basically, not all started, but another trigger. I was always known as Marcus. Like, hey, do you know Marcus? Oh yeah, the guy who plays football. I wanted to be more than just a football player. Because I look at celebrity role models such as P. Diddy or like Mark Cuban or Ralph Lauren or things of that nature, people who have, or Magic Johnson, Michael Jordan, they're known for, let's say, whatever their primary brand was. And then they venture out to different things like you got cologne, you got restaurant branches, you have real estate, you have clothing. You know, so I wanted to diversify my personal brand because I was understanding and learning now in this internet age that your personal brand is the biggest investment that you can make. Mm. So I wanted to become a global brand, not just known in Los Angeles. I wanted it to be different because there's a lot of people that are known in Los Angeles or known like certain cities, but I wanted to take it to another level and be known internationally. So I was able to travel when I was there. Like I remember Fashion Week in London. So it was about 2 hours away. So from like Los Angeles to San Diego. So I literally take the bus. So after class, I take the bus to London, attend the fashion shows, fashion week, network like crazy, and then come back and go to practice like at night after the shows. And the same thing next day, meet with my professor or go to work. And then right after that, took the bus to London, network. So it was like a lot of, because I only had a year. So you can't waste time. Like I don't play video games. Not that anything is wrong with that, but like I just knew you got 10 months. You got to figure it out. So when I was doing all that, it was just so difficult. And like I was understanding there's no such thing as night, day. It was just 24 hours. Mm. So that's when I developed that. You know how like typically you go to bed at like 11, 12, you wake up at 7? Like, no, I was like going to bed like at 6, waking up at 9, and then staying up to like 6, and then going to sleep. Because you have to understand, it's an 8-hour difference. So in China, it was a 10-hour difference. So people who are in China were up where they were going to bed, or people in the UAE were, you know, on their lunch break, or people in America were just now waking up in Europe. So it's like I had to understand. Now it was on a whole nother scale of time zone. Mm-hmm. So to briefly elaborate on that, like I said, trying to become a global brand, there's just 24 hours. So you can, when China's up and Los Angeles or New York is on their lunch break or sleep, you got to adjust. I remember like when I post on Instagram, I'd set my alarm clock to 4 a.m. because it's like 6 p.m. here in Los Angeles. So that's when my followers were normally on Instagram, you know, so different things that like, it was hard. It was difficult, but somehow I did it. I was, I don't know, just somehow it worked.
Well, I love the hustle, you know, and we always think of hustle as a 9-to-5. You're thinking of hustle as 24/7, 365. And that's how you really get where you want to go. An international brand. I love it.
Yeah.
Where do you see this all going? You know, you've obviously got the work ethic, you've got the drive, the smarts, the education. Where does this all go, you know, in the next 5 to 10 years?
I've answered that question, or I've gotten that question a lot. Honestly, I have no answer for you. As God's favor in my life propels, and like every week, every month, something new happens. Like within this first 6 months, because what I do is I write down my goals every October I write quarterly goals. Mm. So in October 2018, I started in 2016. Let's say for 2018, I write them down till June 2019, how I'll go. And let's say it's June 2019 right now. Let's say I set the bar to 7, and then now it's June 2019. I look and I'm at 13. So I understand that writing down my goals and what I want gives me that marker to jump over it, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
So I don't know. Like, so just like what I wrote down in October last year, I've done more and beyond I could even imagine with just in the beginning of July. So I just do my part and, you know, pray and just have the faith and things just align the right way.
Well, and one thing you've said multiple times, you keep using a phrase, you know, I was triggered by this or I was triggered by that. It seems to me that you are a man who is comfortable waiting for something to just
that moment.
Pour kerosene on the fire that's smoldering inside you. And I think that that's a lesson that a lot of our listeners, you know, could really use in their own life. We always want to script our life, or we want to say, I have to have everything planned out from here. We're all, you know, trying to script how life is going to unfold. And that's just not how life is. My mom always used to say, life is what happens when you're making plans. And if you're open to these different triggers, if you're open to these different inputs, it can take you to some really incredible places that you maybe never even thought of. You know, if I went back and talked to 10-year-old Marcus Peterson and said, hey, you're going to play in the NFL one day, you'd probably laugh at me. But because you were willing to be open to these different signals and willing to follow these, you know, budding passions, you know, it's taken you to some, you know, really incredible places. And I think if you can, obviously, as you continue to live your life that way, you know, the sky's the limits for you, Marcus.
Yeah, thank you. Like at 10 years old, I'd probably laugh at you and then ask you, did you want something from the ice cream truck?
Yes, absolutely.
But what I'm learning and unlearning about life is I get triggers. So I spoke at a conference last week at Youth Risk here downtown. And what I've realized growing up is in life, you're placed with triggers and opportunities. Maybe they come once in a lifetime, but you have to be ready. Like, you got to be ready. There's no such thing as getting ready. So, like, you got to be ready for anything and everything. Like, because some mornings I wake up with a random email opportunity that could change my life. But I'm ready for it. And it's probably not even in any industry that I've ever worked with, or, you know, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
especially in the digital age, you never know who. I always say the coolest thing about being an entrepreneur is every single day I wake up and I check my email and I have no idea what's going to be waiting for me there. It could be a email from a massive retailer or an investor, another entrepreneur, but it's that nature of a wonder what awaits me today that I like so much about entrepreneurial business.
Trust. And the thing is, you got to be ready. Like you say, your mom a lot. My mom always had a quote for me. She still does. Excuse me. It's be ready so you don't have to get ready.
I like
and
that.
So do what you need to do now so you can do what you want later.
Brilliant.
Love that.
That's perfect. That's some wisdom right there.
Yeah, that's a great message for our audience to hear, because sometimes we can sit and wait for that moment. But if we aren't ready when it hits, we can't take advantage of it.
Exactly.
Dude, like I'm too antsy. Like I said, I was like only child, so I can't wait for nothing. Like if it doesn't come now, I got to go like find it, get it, steal it, something. Opportunity is what I'm speaking of. But yeah, I'm not a wait type guy, because time waits for nothing. And when you wait, waiting just doesn't really register in my mind, because I don't know, like just a pure example, one of my older friends, when I was in college, he was playing football. He had an opportunity. He did really good in college and didn't have like any opportunities really coming out of college. And then like 2 months later, a team called him and wanted to work him out. Random, out of nowhere.
Oh,
he's
no.
Never heard from these people. So, you know what I'm saying? He's not working out for 2 months.
Yeah, a lot of shape.
Out of shape, goes out there tired, doesn't perform. Mm.
Ugh.
Gets like, it doesn't work out now. He's probably doing something that he doesn't want to be doing. But if you're ready, just like me, like the Chargers called me out of nowhere. Like I had a workout with them, but like they didn't call me. Like I remember I had a workout with them 2017 in July, right the day of camp, and then didn't work out. And then they called me in February, and then I was in Iowa at the time. And then out of nowhere, they called me again July 31st of last year. And it's like, if I'm, see how much of a gap. Those are 6 month gaps.
Oh yeah. Kind of.
So if I'm sitting around playing around, not ready, it's like, hey, we like you. Are you ready? You got practice like in a couple hours. And if I'm BSing around and I'm not ready for my opportunity, then that's, you know, that could have changed my life mm-hmm. in a bad way. So you always, not even just sports, for anybody, like if you want to be a doctor, if you want to be a songwriter, and especially like here in Los Angeles, there's L.A. Reid and A&R is just walking around like there's no tomorrow, you know? So you've got to have your stuff ready. You have your 30-second pitch, your 15-second pitch. You just always have to be ready when it comes to opportunity. So when people ask me about my brand, boom, like second nature. When people ask me about football, business, fashion, you have to be knowledgeable of that stuff and ready, because you get one impression and you get one opportunity. That's what I've been learning. And I've had, not regrets, but I've had some where I wasn't ready and, you know, I had to wait on the next one. Mm-hmm. So now looking back, I understand you got to be ready at all times.
I love it. I'm so excited to follow along, right? Because I know that there are going to be so many opportunities that come your way and you're going to pounce on them. If our listeners want to follow along and see what the next chapter has for you, where can they do that? I know you're very active on Instagram at Marcus T. Peterson. Where else can we keep up with you?
Yeah. So my Instagram handle is Marcus, M-A-R-C-U-S, the letter T, and then Peterson, P-E-T-E-R-S-O-N, which is my name. Also, my other Instagram is MP Motivational Apparel Brand, which I started when I met with David Metzler. And also I got the likes of...
Oh, we love David. He was on the show a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So that's kind of where I first launched it in Irvine. Also Gary Vanderchuk and a couple of NBA players and NFL players and Instagram and influencers, I guess that's what they're called. Mm-hmm. So once I signed and my brand went from just local of wanting it to be a demographic of high school and college students that had the same story that I did to a global approach. So now it's, like I said, when I was traveling in Spain, UAE, Africa, France, literally a bunch of places that I've traveled. Now I have that network and that has reached and inspired people all over the world. So it was a bigger story. And I'm going to say this real quick. The questions that I had coming out of college of why not me, why me, why them, why not this? Those questions weren't answered until August of 2018. Mm. So
and with what that was being that? Said,
just questions of why am I not in the NFL? Why is it not going this way? But if I didn't stay persistent, or if it would have happened that way, I wouldn't be able to have the story that I have now. I wouldn't be able to have traveled to almost half the countries that I've done. Half the countries in the world that I've done. Obtain my MBA, mm-hmm. meet and develop mentally, emotionally, physically that I have if things would have went the way I wanted them to go. So those questions of, I understand that I needed to go and take these steps so I can grow into this. Because now once you get to that high level, it's a whole nother ballgame. You're meeting people from all over, depending on if you're guy or girl, guys, women or men, family members, obstacles, business. And like that, you have to know where your money's going, what money is, financial literacy, who you are as a person, snakes. So it's like you have to, it's a lot. But I'm glad that I went through the trials and tribulations that I went through, because now I understand and recognize and realize the platforms off the field, business-wise, friendship-wise, emotionally, how to deal with things, having that armadillo skin. So those questions, what I mean is that's what I had to go through to where I am now, because I wasn't mentally and physically ready at the time when I thought I was.
I love it, Marcus. Man, you have such a great story. You tell it so well. We can't wait to follow along for the next chapter or chapters of your life. Man, I wish you nothing but the best and keep hustling.
Thank you guys so much. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for your time, Marcus.
Talk soon.
All right, see you guys.
A big thank you to everyone for joining us on that episode. If you want to find out more or listen to other episodes, go to rungum.com/podcast. Also, please make sure to subscribe on iTunes or your preferred player. I'm Nick Simmons, and you've been listening to the Run the Day podcast. Until next time.